Word of mouth.
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 From New Hampshire Public Radio, this is Word of Mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott. In May of 2012, feminist blogger and pop culture critic Anita Sarkeesian launched a Kickstarter campaign called Tropes Versus Women in Video Games.
In addition to being loads of fun to play, research has found that gaming can improve problem-solving skills, teamwork, creative thought, and multitasking. Unfortunately, in addition to all of these benefits, many games tend to reinforce and amplify sexist and downright misogynist ideas about women.
Anita asked for $6,000 to make a video series analyzing gender roles in video games. She raised the money in one day and eventually raised $158,000. The project's first video, Damsel in Distress Part 1, hit YouTube in March.
Princess Peach is in many ways the quintessential stock character version of the Damsel in Distress. The ill-fated princess appears in 14 of the core Super Mario Bros. Platformer games, and she's kidnapped in 13 of them.
Anita's success came at a disturbing price, however. She's been pelted with chauvinistic insults, sexual harassment, and even death threats made online. Attempts have been made to flag and pull her videos from YouTube, and her Wikipedia page was hacked and vandalized with pornographic images. The attack on Anita is just one of many displays of sexism that got us thinking about flagrant misogyny online. Does the anonymous nature of web culture encourage, attract, or even embolden hatred of women? What is the role of online communities and sites like Kickstarter or YouTube in preventing and challenging sexism online? Joining me to discuss these questions is NHPR's Brady Carlson. He's host of All Things Considered and our regular web culture analyst.
Hi, Virginia.
Maddie Myers is also with us. She's video game columnist for Paste Magazine. Hello, Maddie.
Hi.
And Jamin Warren returns to the program, founder and editor-in-chief of Killscreen. That's a video game arts and culture company. Jamin, great to have you back.
Hello, how are you?
Jamin, I want to go to you first. Your perspective, please, on sexism and misogyny in video games in the industry. And are these stereotypes and tropes Anita's pointing out reflected more generally by gamers themselves?
It's obviously a big problem. And I think that that Anita's very brave for being someone to speak out and speak her mind. I think there are a couple issues at heart here. I mean, first and foremost is just the lack of gender diversity in the video game industry to begin with. I mean, if you go to a big video game conference like E3, or even one that's focused on game professionals like the Game Developers Conference, you know, it's 95% men, and there's a couple women here and there. So, you know, it's no surprise then that you see a lot of these tropes appear in a lot of the output. And this is not something that video games alone struggle with. Obviously, Hollywood struggles with this. Publishing houses don't publish as many female authors as they do men. I mean, this is a problem across the board. But I think in particular for games, it's become a pretty serious issue. I don't necessarily think that it's one reflected by all gamers, if only because that term gamers really implies just about everyone now. I mean, half of American households have a video game console in their house. You look at platforms like the iOS, which tends to skew more heavily towards women. So I do think what happened was that Anita sort of shook a hornet's nest of a particular very loudmouth kind of quote unquote gamer who didn't like what she was trying to say. And it's a real shame. And I think it definitely tarnishes the image of what it means to be someone who plays games.
Maddie, how about you? You're a female video game critic. Is there an incentive to write critically about video games if this is the sort of reaction one might look forward to?
I would say it's very difficult to do that. And I think that what has happened to Anita has been also felt by other female critics. There have been times when I've written about gender in games and have gotten a similar reaction, although on a smaller scale. Anita Sarkeesian's Kickstarter actually went viral, and she's become a target in some ways just because she's sort of a face of female game critics right now. I think that might just be her bad luck. There are very few female game critics in general, though, and also not very many women working in the games industry either.
Well, I'm also wondering if, as a video game critic, I mean, it's a particularly active and sometimes virulent community. Even if you're not talking about female roles, do you get sort of flamed for criticizing video games in general?
Yes, and I think one reason for that is that competition is socially coded as a masculine trait, and a lot of video games are about competition. And since video games rely on mental competition, theoretically everybody is equal. It's not like, say, a woman writing about professional sports or professional wrestling, which are also very difficult fields for women to approach from a journalistic perspective, the worst kinds of sexism come out in comments where people say that women mentally can't deal with playing StarCraft or playing fighting games or what have you. It's one thing if people talk about physical differences between men and women, but in video gaming comments in particular, people can talk about the more entrenched kind of misogyny, which is talking about mental differences between men and women, which I obviously don't think exist.
Brady, I'm wondering, we've seen opinion pieces condemning the misogynist reaction to Anita's project in The New Statesman and Wired and The Guardian, Slate, Salon, Jezebel, many, many other places. So how is the internet's reaction fueling or counteracting this kind of online display?
Well, oftentimes it's cyclical, and the way that Maddie described this particular instance going viral is a key component of why things have played out the way they have. I mean, part of it is just the architecture of the web now. It's very easy to post. You can often still do so anonymously. And the fact that we are not really in front of each other makes the web depersonalizing in a way. So for some people, they may see it as this is, you know, just a person on a screen, a character that's not going to read what I write. So I'm just yelling back at the screen. At the same time, there's also the community momentum, which is especially strong in these tight-knit communities, like around gaming or around a particular sport. The net effect is that one person, an Anita Sarkeesian, may stand up, but it's harder and harder to stand up against hundreds and sometimes thousands of people.
Mm. Well, actually, Brady, I think it runs even deeper than that. I mean, if you look at the legal framework around sites that publish content, you know, they're not held responsible for things that are posted there. So if you're Facebook or you're Reddit, you're not necessarily incentivized to flag something that's a problem until someone brings it to your attention, with the exception of child pornography. And so particularly with hate speech, I mean, we've set up a framework where if I'm starting a new website where someone can publish whatever it is that they want, I don't necessarily have to put in safeguards to ensure that members of that community behave in a way that's respectful of others. And it's very strange because you're ending up with these sort of digital nation states. I mean, you know, there are a billion people that use Facebook. There are hundreds of millions of people who use sites like YouTube, for example. These are small, these are countries. These are, you know, large populations of people who don't necessarily have the, you know, social or cultural framework in which they should think about what they say online as having any kind of public ramifications.
Jamin Warren, founder and editor-in-chief of Killscreen, also with us today, Brady Carlson, and Maddie Myers, a video game columnist for Pace Magazine. We're talking about online misogyny, whether the web forum itself encourages it or emboldens it. Is the tide turning, or is it just getting worse? Another offensive element was added to the mix in recent weeks, a Kickstarter project called Above the Game. Here's a clip from the launch video.
I'm Ken Howinski. I want to thank you for checking out my Kickstarter project today. I am raising funds to publish a book that I've written. It's called Above the Game, and it is a guide for men to get better with women. When I was a kid, you know, I was a nerd. You know, I'm not afraid to say it. I spent a lot of time on my computer. I had a BBS when I was 12.
Okay, sounds harmless enough, maybe a little undermatured. But during the campaign, a blogger discovered chapters of the proposed book on Reddit and included some very disturbing language, most of it unfit for radio, I must say, encouraging readers to pressure, assault, and some argued rape women. Now, after the project was funded, Kickstarter issued an apology through their blog and said, "We're sorry for getting this so wrong," and prohibited seduction guides in the future, saying that these things do not belong on Kickstarter. Finally, they donated $25,000 to RAIN, an anti-sexual violence organization. Maddie, what do you think about the action Kickstarter took in this case? Was it enough, or is it even up to Kickstarter to be the watchdog when the whole point of crowdfunding is to let people decide what's worth funding?
I think it is absolutely Kickstarter's job to be the watchdog in this instance because they are a private company and there are other ways to do crowdfunding on one's own website if one wanted to do so. But Kickstarter is a brand and they have to think about what their brand represents. I do think they did the right thing in apologizing, but they say that they got complaints about the seduction guide a couple hours before it ended, but that wasn't enough time for them to put a stop to the Kickstarter. And now Ken Howinski did end up getting, I believe, about $15,000. Although I appreciate their apology, I question why it is that they were unable to stop this if they truly did not think that it was the right thing to fund.
Brady, we've also seen social media sites like YouTube or Facebook criticized for not being able to better moderate comments. What do you think their responsibility is?
Well, I think it comes back to something that Jamin said. Up until now, the guiding principle that companies have used has simply been the law. There may be a sense that the tech industry is now growing so huge and influential that we need to start thinking about what it means to be good citizens. If we have these nation states, what does it mean to be a good nation? What I think is really important in this particular case is that the community not only pointed out this flaw, but people across the web started speaking out about it directly. Up until now, we as community members have relied on that report this button that's at the bottom of videos and Facebook posts and tweets to police it and figure the moderators need to do the rest. But I wonder if that simply just drives that kind of content underground and doesn't really change the dynamic of the conversation. Maybe it would take a more direct kinds of conversations where people are confronting people who are doing misogynist things or posting misogynist projects to say, this is not simply something we need to delete. It's something that we need to confront and change.
Brady, you're right. I think it's good to see companies like Kickstarter take a more active role and not just ask this question, you know, do we want people to come to our site, but what kind of people do we want those visitors to be? How should they think about their engagements with that website? I do think it's worth noting that, you know, a lot of these startups are, and Kickstarter is a notable exception in that they actually hire a lot of women there. They actually have like a pretty healthy gender ratio at that company. But a lot of other, you know, tech startups, that's not the case. And I think it's not surprising at all that you do have websites that are, you know, predominantly created by men and that they don't necessarily think about these communal concerns. Like, what can we do to protect people who maybe don't have the same kind of voice in the public square that we do?
Well, you are all talking about sexism on the web being reflective of sexism in society at large. And I've been hearing a lot of conversations about the summer movie menu with very, very few female leads. So they're sort of reinforcing the idea that sexism sells. How is that manifesting?
I think it's definitely a chicken and egg problem in that, you know, you create a system that perpetuates itself. So you don't produce any types of media that have strong female leads. And then when you do, it doesn't do as well as maybe you hope because you didn't give it the marketing support that required. And so the cycle continues and continues and continues. So, I do think in the case of games in particular, that there does need to be a very, very big shift in terms of who we think plays games and what people are definitely interested in. And at the end of the day, you know, unfortunately, I think people do need to speak with their wallet and make sure that they're supporting things that they think advance values that are good for everyone.
Well, Anita Sarkeesian makes the point that she plays these games. They can be wonderfully interactive and social and interesting to play. Last word to you, Maddie. Do you think the fundamental change is with the makers?
I do think that. And I think that some of those changes are happening, to end it on a lighter note. If you look at the best-selling top five games recently in 2013, Tomb Raider is one of them. They recently created a sort of redux of the Tomb Raider image in which Lara Croft is a bit more human seeming and not a performative supermodel type, more of a human being, as it were. And another game that's been very popular this month is The Last of Us, which, although it doesn't star a playable female character, it includes several female characters who all seem like human beings as opposed to caricatures. And I've appreciated seeing that. And those are games that have been big blockbusters, very popular games. So I think things are getting better. And I do think that the onus is on these bigger companies, these bigger journalistic outlets, and Kickstarters even, to decide who they want their audience to be and who they want to feel safe within these spaces. Do they want to make them a safe space for misogynists, or do they want to make them a safe space for everybody else?
Maddie Myers, video game columnist for Pace Magazine, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
And Jamin Warren, founder and editor-in-chief of Killscreen. Jamin, thanks again.
No problem. Take care.
Brady Carlson, great to have you with us, NHPR's host of All Things Considered and Word of Mouth web culture analyst. Thank you.
My pleasure.
You can find a link to Anita Sarkeesian's video series, Tropes vs. Women in Video Games, as well as reactions to her online harassment and Kickstarter's apology for the Above the Game project. All that is at wordofmouthradio.org. And while you're there, let us know what you think. Has the web created, attracted, or maybe intensified misogynistic thinking and content? Do you feel it's your duty to stand up to that kind of content? Or if you've been the victim of online misogyny, what have you done to cope with it or counteract it? You can share your thoughts on our Facebook page at Word of Mouth, and we promise to carefully and respectfully moderate the comments. There's more Word of Mouth coming right after the break. Please stay with us.